Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, welcome to BT Sports podcast, Life's a Pitch. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tony Evans of the Evening Standard and Adrian Clark of Arsenal TV. First things first, let's have none of this Battle of Britain nonsense. England against Wales is a football match, not a war game. Security issues are real and must be addressed. But let's start on the pitch. A lot of pressure on England. Is Roy Hodgson reverting to type, Tony?
Well, when the pressure was at its maximum, Roy's innate conservatism always comes to the surface. And this is the problem. It's building. You know what? He picked quite a reasonable team, I thought, against Russia. And they were on top and should have put the game away. But when things were crying out for an injection of pace against a tired and inept Russian side, what does he do? You know, he goes for the conservative. He goes to try and hold on to the game. And with that defence, you can't do that.
With Roy, you know, you always get found out in tournaments, don't you? Yeah. And I know it's all about performance normally, but in the tournament, it's about a result, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. First things first, I think he got the shape of the team right. The energy was good. And I felt that it was a decent performance. I really do, but did. And let's get this right. We didn't draw that game because he took Wayne Rooney off for Jack Wilshere. It had minimal impact on what really happened, I think, in that game. I would have sort of said, it's not working with Harry Kane. Harry Kane doesn't look sharp. We're not getting him into the game. Should we bring on someone to support him, change things up, or against a pretty slow Russian defence, maybe inject a little bit of skill, somebody to some speed and skill, a Sturridge or a Vardy, just to give the Russians something different. He didn't do that, and I think, you know, that is why we hadn't scored two or three goals, because we should have put them to bed early.
When you put on Wilshere and Milner, you're kind of inviting them in. You know,
but that's Roy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And what would have been better is someone's hit them on the break. You've got Vardy and Sturridge, all that pace there. Yeah. And it's still sitting there, you know.
This is what you get. You've got a team or a squad that is young, vibrant, built to attack. This is a team that are better on the front foot. You've got a guy in charge of them whose natural inclination is to be cautious. So what were we going to get from England? I think we kind of got that at the weekend. Mm. Lots of positives, but ultimately a coach that isn't dynamic enough.
What about changes, Tony? You know, they play with a back three. Wales play with a back three, so you're probably going to still stay with a 4-3-3 formation. The one disappointment I thought was, you know, in that wide area, maybe Sturridge in there instead of Raheem Sterling, who had great pace and got forward well, but his decision making was poor and his final ball was terrible.
Well, it's always been the problem with Sterling throughout his career. He's only young, you know, you say he's going to learn, but you get to the point where you wonder. I would have thought, though, Sturridge would be better deployed up front. I always thought, in that setup, instead of Kane, Sturridge would have made a better foil, certainly with the back three running in behind them, causing all sorts of problems. I mean, that's the change I'd be inclined to make.
This is the problem. He's gone with 4-3-3. We like it now. OK, it's a system that the players seem happy with. But who is there to play on the left if it's not Raheem Sterling? So you can bring Lallana over there, but he did well on the right. You've got Vardy, who's a striker. You've got Sturridge, he's a striker. This is, you know, the non-selection of Ambrose. Yeah, well, the non-selection of Townsend it just beggars belief, because Ross Barkley, will he get a game? And if so, will it be as a left winger? Now, surely, if you've got two left wingers, you'd put Townsend ahead of Barkley every day of the week. So, yeah, I wasn't very impressed with the preparation. I think we wasted the friendlies.
Definitely.
This squad are good, and I think we've got a lot of exciting young players, but I don't think we've got the right guy in charge.
How do we deal, then, with Gareth Bale? You know, you talk about
Welsh in terms of, you know, fantastic unity, brilliant support. But it is an individual game, and he was fantastic in his first game.
Yeah, very much. A lot of pressure will be on Dyer, you know, to block him off as he makes those runs through. I mean, if you don't, you don't want Bale bearing down on those centre-halves, you know, might have real problems then. Yeah, I think, and I think Rooney playing in that deeper role is going to have to pay attention to where Bale is as well. I think they're basically going to have to play bump and run with him whenever the ball comes near. Someone get close to him, sort of put a challenge in there and try and stop him at source.
Roy's got involved with this, and he's talking about disrespect just because Bale is saying, you know, we're a more united group than you are.
Look.
You know, this, it drives me mad about football and footballers. This thing about respect is nonsense.
Yeah, well, he's not disrespectful, is it? I mean, he's maybe just fanning the flames there, just chucking a little bomb out there, a little grenade. It's not a big deal, and I think Roy should just bat that one away, really.
It's worked if Hodgson's rising to it. That's one of the things about Roy. You know, you go into press conferences and things like that, and you see things and you think, nah, no man's in the right mind, I'll bite on this. And Roy goes off on one. Oh, but stop it!
From a tactical point of view, they might use Robson Kanu this time around. I think Wales were excellent, but Bale is a frontline strike. I'm not sure. I think you want Robson Kanu doing the donkey work if you're the Wales gaffer, running in the channels just to free up space for Bale in there. And I think that's the concern, because we want our fullbacks, or England want their fullbacks, to bomb on, and they will. So I think Robson Kanu in those channels, getting there, rolling in Gareth Bale, that's where we've got to be really careful.
What about, you know, Aaron Ramsey? You obviously watch an awful lot of him. Is it fair to say he had a tepid end to the season?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. He hasn't been anywhere near the same player since he had that purple patch of a season. He is quality. I like his engine. I think he's got an eye for goal. But his passing's a little bit loose, and he's become a bit of a hit or miss player. Quite frustrating to watch him in many respects. I'm a fan, but I also want Aaron Ramsey to just almost taper it back a little bit. I think he thinks he's a real star, and that he's a wonderful footballer that can make things happen. He can. But I think if he plays a more simplistic game, Aaron Ramsey, concentrates on what he's best at, breaking into the box, scoring goals, buzzing around here and there, I think he'd be a better player.
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed with him. You know, and if you're going to dye your hair blonde and stand out like that,
that's always a big danger sign.
It is,
when you see those silly haircuts.
Yeah, definitely. You know,
at least he didn't have the map of Wales.
The Croatia players. Yeah. with Wales, we look at them. If you judge it player by player, England should have enough quality. How do England get at Wales? Maybe their goalkeepers?
Well, yeah, the goalkeepers. And I mean, I think, you know, you're right, there's a lack of quality there. There's a lack of pace. And that's the one thing England have in abundance. But what Wales have got is a team spirit. And it's very much, you know, it's almost a cliche this year. The Leicester, the greater than the sum of the parts. And they work for each other. And there's a sense that sometimes England don't. You know, if England play the game, if England clear out those centre earth, stretch them, you know, with someone like Sturridge running down there, if they, you know, the runners from midfield come through, then they should be able to profit and they should be able to beat them. But Wales will be well organised and they'll be, you know, they'll be up for it, seriously up for it.
What I noticed in that game was that the centre-halves of Wales, the two wide centre-halves, would go and engage the midfielders or the forwards quite far up the pitch. So if you've got a Lallana coming short for the ball, he's going to have a centre-half up his toes. This is where you play the up, back and through. Bounce it off, then you need the midfield runner or a quick striker to bend the runs into the channels. Yeah. I think against the three centre backs that want to get tight, England can make
it. It's not quite a sweeper system, but there is like a cushion behind those two.
Williams is the cover guy. Obviously, Williams is like your Wes Morgan, isn't he? He sticks his head on everything. He's a courageous defender, but it's those two wide centre backs. They can get sucked out of position, and we can get the runners in behind. That's how I see it.
We talk a lot about unity. You know, as a professional footballer yourself, Adrian. Yeah. Is that just us outsiders talking about the importance? When you're inside a team, is it important?
It is important. Yeah, it does make a difference. It really does. It's not being exaggerated. I've played in teams that have been really together and they've had a lot less talent. I just think if you know that your mate is covering you and you know you can rely on your mate, you can actually play with even more confidence than if that player was better technically, but you couldn't trust them. It's a trust issue, and all over the pitch you've got partnerships, and you can't have weak links. And Leicester, we go back to them, didn't have many weak links last season, so that makes a huge difference. And Wales have got it in spades. I actually think England have got a pretty decent team spirit and togetherness this time around. But yeah, it can take a team that's less talented much, much further than they would ordinarily go. It's all about having your mates back. And it's vital in a team game.
Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed in watching Rooney really closely, he's very good with the younger players, talks a lot of players through games. Has he finally found his niche, or a new niche?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a different Rooney from the European Championships of 2004, you know, which was probably the way people always remember him, you know, as this tyro who was going to go to conquer the world. Never quite happens. But, you know, I mean, there was a lot of speculation about, a lot of talk about whether Rooney should be in the team. And I was one of the people who questioned him, to be fair. But you do need a captain, you need a leader. And he was, he's doing that role really well.
Yeah, but it's not a role, I agree, but it's not a role that he practised in once for England. We had that game at Stadium of Light. He played him striker. Now, if he had this in mind, that Rooney would play in that midfield three, why didn't he practise in that game?
Well, that's the essence of Hodgsonism, though, isn't it? You know, it's like...
Is that a thing?
Yeah,
Hodgsonism.
That is a thing. Yeah.
Roy sounds like some sort of religious sect, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I like Roy. I just can't go get past this fact that he's so cautious, and I do think he's wasted the build-up big time.
Yeah, we've got a lot to be cautious about off the pitch, haven't we? Now, we've looked at this tournament so far, and it's been completely scarred by hooliganism, and you know, the sinister area is almost organised hooliganism. Mm. You know, basically, from the Russians, you've got the French fans involved, and the England fans can't avoid blame. We're playing in Lawns, very small city. A lot of the England fans are going to be in Lille, where Russia played the day before. A lot to think about.
Yeah, and that's brilliant, because UEFA never give any of us a second's thought. You know what, it's like when I was in Basel for the Europa League final, couldn't believe the organisation. It was so bad and it was dangerous. And I thought, you know, it's got to be better for the Euros. No. I mean, just putting England and Russia in Marseille, possibly the most dangerous city in France, the most volatile city in France, you know, was bad enough. But the policing's been awful. And, you know, I don't see why, when the draw is made back in December, then they can't think about, well, let's see where the best place would be for this game. Mm. You know, I mean, for example, you've got England, Wales, you know, they're playing it in a really small stadium, a lower league stadium. And, you know, it's a game that could sell out 10, 15 times, and everyone's got to stay in Lille, where our friendly Russians will be there the night before. It's just a recipe for disaster, and no one's given it a minute's thought. But you know what? I bet you all those UEFA officials are having a great time, eating and drinking best French wine, all on expenses, and they'll have a fantastic tournament.
You look at the tournament as a whole. How big a problem have UEFA got with this? Because there are copycat things going on now. We've had the German fans involved. As I said, the French fans have been involved. It's a real issue, isn't it?
It is, yeah, because I think England fans are notorious, aren't they, across Europe, even though the hooliganism has faded out, hasn't it, here? In the Premier League, there's no trouble anymore, hardly any anyway. So I think it's a badge of honour to take on the English. I think that's what happened a little bit in Marseille. And like you say, the right-wing factions across Europe, of which there are many, they'll all want a piece of it, won't they? This is like the biggest... It's going to be a great tear-up for them. It's nothing really to do with the football. I just hate it. It's horrible. And you shouldn't... You know, I went as a fan to Euro 2004. I had a brilliant time. You shouldn't go to these events and fear for your safety. I mean, I wouldn't be going to Russia for the World Cup. That's for sure. I think that is frightening, and I can see half-empty stadiums because why would you want to risk yourself going there?
I think, you know, do you have to sometimes think to yourself, is football worth it? You know, that went through my mind when I saw some of those fans, you know, terrified kids. You've got a city in chaos. Is football worth that?
Well, yeah, you do wonder. It's mad. The whole thing's insane. But the thing is, football could easily be played without these problems. It's relatively easy to police. The British police have been criticising the way things have been done by the French, and the CRS, the French riot police. Well, you know, they are the most violent, most vicious police I've ever come across in my life. They're awful, and there are two ways of policing a tournament like this. You can police it like it's a big party. And so, yeah, I know the England fans are boorish. They're all the shirts off, singing drunk about, you know, no surrender to the IRA and German bombers. But you can decide they're having a good time. You put small groups of police around them. You know, so you know, heavy-handed stuff. You know, if it begins to get troublesome, go over and have a word, and you can decide it's like that. Or you can decide, you know what, this is wild hooliganism. Line up your police vans, get your tear gas out and fire it into them. And that's what they did. And no one tracked the Russian hooligans, which, were, again, if this tournament was in England or Britain, these things wouldn't happen. You know, the police forces, the Greater Manchester Police, the Merseyside Police, know how to handle these things. The French are a bit like, you know, there's a sense that they wanted to see how the fighting would work out before they intervened.
Mm. UEFA are talking about any more trouble.
Yes, yeah, nonsense.
They're going to throw. Yeah, is that just the normal sort of stereotypical bluster?
It's not going to happen. I mean, for starters, are they prepared to fully investigate what happened around the old port? Do they know all the facts? No. Inside the stadium, England fans didn't do anything for it wrong. You know, by all accounts, all the people that I know that were there have all said that they were the innocent party. They were the ones being chased. So I don't see how UEFA can bar England based on what happened inside that stadium. It would be ridiculous. And then you've got the French fans getting involved. No, it's not going to happen, but I understand why they're saying it, but it's not feasible.
I can see how they get England out of the tournament. They've sent an agent, Hodgson.
one of the nicer groups so far, you know, we looked at Northern Ireland, and actually also let's put a shout out to the Wales fans. I thought they were fantastic, by the way.
Yeah, but you do worry when they meet Russia what the problem's going to be. I mean, you know, we might see who the real culprits are there, because everyone knows the Wales fans are there for a good time. They drank a lot of beer, they sang a lot of songs, but they were great. And the Northern Irish having a wonderful time with the Poles, by the look of it. Mm. You know, it's and so, yeah, I mean, and I think, again, it's how you view it. You can look at those Wales fans in Bordeaux and you can say, you know, is this drunken buffoonery? Because they were doing many of the things England fans doing without the IRA and the bombers. Mm. But, you know, you make a decision which way you're going to police it. They've been policed really well. I do worry about when they play Russia.
Mm. The Irish, Northern Irish, you know, there's a tragic incident. The 24-year-old fan has died. Mm. The full details have yet to emerge. Mm. If you look at that Northern Ireland experience, they've waited 30 years for that. Is the worth been worthwhile for them?
Well, hopefully they'll get a positive result against Ukraine, and then I think it will feel like the way it's been worth it. I thought it was a great occasion. Great to see so many green shirts, wasn't it, inside the stadium. Just a shame the team didn't really deliver on the day. I think they did freeze a little bit, but it was almost... They were hamstrung by the players that they had available, and they just couldn't get out, could they? Yeah. I think it's fair enough being solid, but they just had no outlet until later on, when I thought the subs came on, Dallas and Washington came on and did really well. They lifted it, and I think that should give Michael O'Neill encouragement that they can maybe pull off a shock against Ukraine. You know, they're not going to get anything against Germany, you'd imagine. So beat Ukraine and they might have an outside chance of sticking around. But it was a disappointing start for them. But look, their prize really is being involved in it.
I think the bottom line is if they come out of it with a point, they'll be lucky.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you look at it, you know, they're two wing-backs that they used in that five at the back. Mm. You know, one plays for Fleetwood Town, the other for Millwall. You know, good players at that level.
Mm.
But they're up against, you know, Lewandowski.
Yeah, and you know, and Ukraine played quite well in spells against Germany. You know, they were flat in other parts, which will give the Northern Irish encouragement. But I think it's going to be tough for them.
Are they a bit negative, though, Ukraine?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I mean, you'd think they should have taken it to Germany earlier. Mm. you know, they look as if they've got the sort of players who can carve out chances. So, but I don't think they'll be negative against Northern Ireland. Yeah. Being negative against Germany is one thing. The Northern Irish, quite another.
The Northern Ireland might as well just go for it. They can gamble. You know, this is their big chance to get 3 points and a famous win, to etch their names in with some of the legends from Northern Ireland history. And, yeah, this is their big chance. Mm.
Look at Germany. Are they the ultimate tournament team?
Well, yeah, they're very good. They're very disciplined. They've got loads of talent. You know, it's it was somewhat surprising that they didn't put Ukraine away earlier, but they do look good. You know, it's people are asking questions about them before the tournament. Well, I mean, just part of that performance, you look at them, you can't see a side playing better than them.
Slick, aren't they? Just so slick on the ball. Can't get it off them. Movement. They've got it all. I think they're a bit weak at full-back. The centre-half, Mustafi, who scored...
Did nothing at Everton, did he? I think he played 15 minutes.
Yeah, not completely sold on him, although do like Boateng. They're going to be there or thereabouts, Germany. They've got so much more quality on the ball, even than a promising England side. Yeah, really.
Do you know, though, I mean, over the years, you look at England, you say they don't keep possession well enough. And, you know, you say it's fine. Then you see Germany, who do keep possession. And one of the things that always strikes me watching Germany is how much running the players off the ball do to keep that possession, to get into space. And England are a bit static there. So, you know, why can't we keep possession? Well, we pass it across the back and people can press you. The Germans are moving all the time. Yeah. And it's a fantastic thing to watch.
But it was interesting, you know, Lowe, the coach was saying, well, one, we're a slightly broken team, which is not bad. Yeah, yeah. But secondly, he criticised his own team for that wasting that possession, especially in the first half.
Yeah, I think they've been quite hard on themselves, really. I thought...
Winners are, though, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I thought they were one of the most impressive teams. Look, if they had England's four forwards in their squads, I think you really would be saying that this team can go. Because that's the thing they lack. Yeah. Gomez is all right. And Gerts, I think it's been a shadow of his old self, even though he's still relatively young.
Lewandowski looked a bit tepid as well,
didn't he? For Poland, he wasn't on top form. Yeah. But, yeah, if Germany had themselves a proper striker... Mm.
I mention that because, you know, are we in a tournament where the strikers aren't the stars, are they?
So far, that's fair to say. Yeah, Kane was jaded, Lewandowski didn't shine. Mm. I think in the first matches of any major tournament, the watchword is caution, don't lose. Mm. It's not just Roy. It is a lot of the teams are very wary. So it's only in games two and three where some teams need to win, they need to come out and play. That's when you'll see more goals. That's where you'll see maybe the strikers really make a name for themselves. There's some quality players at this Euros, and I'm quite encouraged, even though we haven't seen a lot of goals, but I think it's been relatively attack-minded football, considering teams don't want to lose.
We always look for the traditional dark horse. Now, Arsene Wenger's identified Croatia as the team to watch. Any thoughts?
Well, I mean, everyone's picked Croatia as a dark horse. Come on, Arsene, I want more from you. I'm interested to see Austria. You know, I think that they'll be, they've got quite a lot going for them. You know, they're built around Bayern Munich's David Abala, and I think they've got a good midfield, they've got a good striker who'll score goals, and a reasonable defence. I think they could. Probably quarterfinals, you know, with a fair wins, maybe squeak a win. Croatia are a good side. I mean, I think Croatia were my tip for the last World Cup. That never worked out. But everyone always tips Croatia.
Good midfield, isn't it? I mean, Modric and Rakitic. If you got that as part of your midfield, you got Mandzukic. You know he's going to score goals. So the Croatia, I don't think we should regard them as minnows as such. But they'll be there or thereabouts. But don't have a lot of pace today about them going forward. Mandzukic, you know what you're going to get with him. Yeah. I think they've got their limitations, but yeah, they'll probably get to the knockouts.
They look like another quarter-final team to me. Mm.
Yeah. What about France? You know, they're in an easy group. Let's get that straight right from the start. They've got Albania on Wednesday. There's always a lot of pressure on a host team starting off their own tournament. They did OK. They were rescued by Dimitri Payet. Mm. Is he too good to stay at West Ham?
Well, you'd say that a couple of years ago. You know, you'd say, yeah, definitely the big clubs will be circling. But the reality is West Ham have got the new television deal. They can offer him any money he wants. If they want him, they can keep him. They don't have to be bullied into letting him go. Will he want to go? I'm sure he'll be looking for a club of a higher level. You know, I mean, if he could get it to, you know, either the Spanish giants, he'd be offered a shot. But I think in the short term, West Ham might sue him next year.
What about Pogba? Now, there's another one. Naturally, will I would think, rather than go to a Manchester, or go back to a Man United, would gravitate towards a Real Madrid.
Of course he will. Yeah, going back to Payet, I think it was one of the best individual performances I've seen for a long time. I thought he was just brilliant in that match. So, but yeah, why would you change it, I suppose, if you're at West Ham? But yeah, Pogba is a real talent, isn't he? Still don't know where he fits in sometimes. He's used quite wide, isn't he, for France.
Is it me as well, or is he a bit brainless? Does he make bad decisions all the time?
I think he's maybe overconfident sometimes. I don't know. I know what he's saying.
Physically, he's brilliant. Yeah. But every time I watch him, I'm like, something not quite
good. He's not a show pony, but he does these beautiful crossfield passes, which look $1 million. He wriggles past players, you know, beautifully with real grace. But does he score enough goals? Does he impact on the game enough? That's probably the question mark. I do rate him, and you would think he'd definitely go to Real Madrid or Barcelona over Manchester United. I don't see that as being a viable transfer unless everybody else pulls out the running because they don't want to spend the money on him.
Well, he'll be the next in an incoherent Real Madrid midfield, and we'll all wonder why, you know, what we saw in him.
You see any players around who will get the worth getting the checkbook out for?
Yeah, it's early days, isn't it? Yeah. The Polish player Kapuska. He was good, wasn't he? A teenager. He looked pretty sharp.
Plays in domestic football in Poland, so we're pretty cheap as well.
I think he's nailed on to get a move, isn't he? I think that's the one that really springs to mind from this opening.
Someone like Evan could go for that German goal scorer fella.
Not that Schweinsteiger guy. Yeah. Sort of player that Man United could do with him.
I'll tell you who looked good. Didn't really feature much last year. Johnny Williams, the Wales player. I thought he looked really comfortable on that big stage. He was given a bit of a free role, wasn't he, for Wales? We've known about him for a while.
He's been really unlucky with injuries.
I know. But he looked to me like a player that did belong at a high level, and it makes me wonder whether he might get himself a little move if he can stay in the team.
Never buy on the back of a tournament.
No, this is true. Arsenal bought before the tournament. Granit Xhaka played very well in the Swiss win.
Yeah, I was impressed. I think he was wanted the ball all the time. His left foot is a peach. He's got a peach of a left foot, so he was drilling the ball here, there, and everywhere. And most of the time, it was on the money. Some great tackles. One of them was borderline. Another referee might have interpreted it as a yellow or a red. So you've got to be careful. But he looks a player to me, and I'm very happy that Arsenal signed him.
He's going to be the last man in that Arsenal midfield, isn't he? It's the all poor forward. He's going to get about 5 red cards.
He did. I was keeping a very close eye on him, actually. And at times, actually, he isn't the type of defensive midfielder that actually charges around, like in a Flamini style or even a Coquelin who wants to get onto the left, to the right. He actually was very disciplined. He often stood still. And I was thinking, is he a bit lazy? But no, he got himself there. He was strong. And he kept things simple. He didn't try and overdo it.
I was very impressed. I think it's a brilliant buy for Arsenal.
Yeah, I think it was one of the best performances of the tournament so far in that position. I think Dyer was excellent. Kante was superb, and Xhaka was good. Was great too.
Kante, to me, he never has a bad game, does he?
No, he's great. He's a really good player, and his anticipation's superb. His awareness of people around him. He was just magnificent last year for Leicester, and he's carried us on in this tournament.
Do you expect him to move?
If Vardy actually turns Arsenal down, which is within his rights to do, we don't know yet what he's going to do. If he does say no, out of loyalty or whatnot, there's every chance that within a week or two, Kante or Mahrez can just say, well, actually, we're
off. Well, Kasper Schmeichel's almost been mentioned in dispatches as a potential move as well.
Yeah, so, like, I understand why all the Leicester teammates are badgering Vardy, saying, come on, you stick with us, mate, it's going to be great. But the truth is, if he does spurn that opportunity, it might come back to bite.
Surely it's all about, you know, the Euros, and he's concentrating on that, and he, you know, can't, like, sort of think, you know, there's so much going on. He'll come back and he'll go, hang on, like, Leicester, Arsenal.
Well, I'll tell you if he doesn't play, or he didn't feature much in this tournament, he might be thinking, Is it because I'm a Leicester player?
Yeah.
Do I need to go to an Arsenal to
is your club, Tony, a fashion statement almost?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, it's the prestige of playing for Arsenal is huge. You know, a club that's recognised across the world. You know, I mean, Leicester obviously have come to prominence this year. But, you know, I mean, they're going to finish 8th, 9th, 7th maybe. I don't know. And Arsenal going to be in the top four again.
Would you expect Vardy to even get a sniff at starting?
Yeah. For Arsenal?
No, for England.
For England, not based on Roy's recent actions. No, I think he's going to be used as an impact sub. I thought that game would have been perfect for him, especially if you saw Kane after an hour, he was labouring, it wasn't really working. I would have unleashed Vardy there in that game. It didn't happen. But if he does join Arsenal, I think it'd be a good shootout between him and Giroud.
Mm. Well, I tell you what, I like the idea of him joining Arsenal. Immediately, he gives them the nastiness they need. You know, Graeme Souness called him a team of son-in-laws. Well, you know, he's not a son-in-law. You know, he's the bad boyfriend from the wrong side of the tracks.
He's got to keep his missus quiet, though, hasn't he?
Okay, so final question, chaps. We've got a rather large game on Thursday. England Wales scorecasts, please.
2-1 to England. Although I hope Wales get a point.
You hope? I hope Wales get a point.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
Are you Welsh?
No, I'm Scouse. So I have no emotional investment in either of them.
Fair enough. I think England will win. I was going to go for 2-1-2. Either 2-1 or 3-2. I think there'll be goals in it because England's defence, I don't know if they're good enough to keep a clean sheet, but they should have too much quality.
Yeah. Well, I'm not so sure. This one could be a Desmond 2-2. Thanks for joining us here on Life's a Pitch.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.